We all remember the kind of history we were taught at school. It was a queer sort of stuff which aimed at doing two things. It endeavored in the first place to nourish us on a diet of facts, and in the second, to provide us with a set of correct opinions. The facts consisted of isolated pieces of information. They told us the year in which William I came to the throne, the Christian names of Edward III's wives, and what Henry VIII had for his dinner on his 40th birthday. Why we were told these things, we did not know, and it is probable that our teachers knew no better than we did. Certainly we had no notion of what sort of people they were about whom these facts were recorded. We knew nothing of the lives they lived, the customs they observed, or the civilization they achieved. History indeed seemed to have little to do with people. It was full of kings and generals, of great men and of bad men, but of common men, who were neither great nor bad, it had nothing to say. To judge from the number of battles that figured in these records, the great men and the bad men, the kings and the generals, were a bloodthirsty lot, usually at each other's throats. But the extent to which the wars affected the civilian population was a matter on which history was silent. Since the facts we had accumulated meant nothing to us, we forgot them as soon as we conveniently could, with the result that we grew up into men and women, and what is more, into citizens governing a great empire, and we knew nothing about history at all. But our history teachers were not content that we should get our facts right. Our opinions had to be right as well. Right opinions in this connection means patriotic opinions. It is necessary that the young citizen should think his country deserving of support into whatever quarrel she may enter. Her history, therefore, should be such as to win his admiration.